A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 19th Chapter, verses 20 to 40. Appearance of Shukadeva Goswami.
Nava idam raja shivarya chitram pavatsu krishnam samanuvateshu yedyasanam raja kirita justam sadyajahar bhagavat pashvakarma.
Translation. The sages said, O chief of all the saintly kings of the Pandu dynasty, who are strictly in the line of Lord Krishna, it is not at all astonishing that you give up your throne, which is decorated with the helmets of many kings, to achieve eternal association with the personality of Godhead.
Mukam karati vachalam pangam langayate girim yakipam tamham vande shri gurum dinatavanam om agyana timrandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshuramanitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha.
Maharaj Parikshit has heard the news of his imminent death within 7 days, and he says, Sadhu, Sadhu Mene, very good news. This is very wonderful. This is mercy. Why does he say this is good news? So many reasons. What? He has time to prepare? Yes. Yes, now he was happy he was going to get the reaction quickly so he could finish it off. Why else? Yes, Ching. Yes, virakti. It is opportunity to become detached. Abhinanda. Yes, he can chant Krishna and go back to Krishna. Yes. Yes, he sees the mercy in the presence of the great association surrounding him. Krishna has come to be with me at the time of death. Yes? All his life he's looking for Krishna. Yes. So now the chance has come. He is Parikshit, and now finally he's going to see his Lord face to face. So Parikshit was always ready to leave his kingdom, but he was too entangled in the management of the world, of the whole world. Imagine the management of the whole world. So now Krishna, he says, Parikshit says, Krishna has appeared before me in the form of time to take away my material attachments. So the news spread to all the corners of the universe, and all the great sages, Devarshi, Brahmarshi, Rajarshi, everybody came there to get the association of Maharaj Parikshit, to see him go back to Godhead, and to hear Srimad Bhagavatam spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. Parikshit is very grateful to the sages for blessing him by their presence, and he thinks, of course, this we'll hear today. It must be due to his grandfather's pure devotion that they are coming here to see him. Nothing of himself. He said, I am like rejected refuse. Anyway, that was his attitude. So although Parikshit had made up his mind that I'm going to go and fast, sit on the bank of the Ganga and simply hear about Krishna, still he placed his decision before all of the sages to get their approval, to get their blessings, at the last stage of his life. So he showed the example that even if you're a Mahabhagavata, you always consult the authorities to see what is the right thing to do. So this example of Maharaj Parikshit's behavior, his remaining patient even at the last stage of his life, his undisturbed condition of mind, is an example of reservation, according to Nectar of Devotion. And Parikshit prays, his last prayer is that if I have to be born again in this world, let me have attachment for Krishna, association of devotees, and let me be friendly relationship to all living entities. So that is his last prayer. He also shows the attitude of a person who is preparing to leave this world, that he prays to be excused for his offenses. He leaves all his attachments behind. He consults the sadhus about what to do, and he's very determined to fix his mind upon Krishna by hearing and chanting. What's that? Sure is. Well, you've got some time before you die, I hope, so you can assimilate these instructions. Better start now. Start now by assimilating these instructions, and then at the time of death, you'll be ready, whenever it may come. Yes. It's quite a lot of instructions. Yes. Actually, Ananta Shesha, he's always glorifying the Lord and his devotees with his thousands of mouths. And he's doing it 24 hours a day, but still he doesn't find the end of the qualities and the glories of the Lord and his devotees. So we are only mentioning a few things here about Parikshit, but of course there is so much more that can be said. How to prepare for death. So he prays for the right situation in his next life, just in case he comes back. And the demigods then show their pleasure by showering down flowers upon Parikshit, creating a very auspicious atmosphere. And the sadhus also, they say, sadhu, sadhu. This is all very good. So now we will continue. We have heard the sages are beginning their glorification of Parikshit's devotion here. They're very pleased with him. That his throne is decorated with the helmets of many kings. So this throne that Parikshit had, so generally if you're a king or a president, you really have to fight to keep your throne, to keep your position, or even to protect your country. But his throne was undisputed. All of the other kings in the whole world came to Parikshit and they surrendered all their wealth and their lives for their own benefit, as it is said in chapter 4. Just because he was such a Mahabhagavata that they trusted him. They surrendered to him just for their own sake. They gave everything to him. And now Parikshit is surrendering everything for Krishna's sake, for Lord Krishna. He's giving up everything. He's giving up that throne which was decorated by the helmets of all kings. Because what is the value of this whole world? We heard this verse compared to 1 second or part of a second association with the pure devotees. So Parikshit, he's giving up this huge, vast wealth just to get the association of the devotees. Now he got his chance to get the association. Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, it was Sanatan who had a hard time to get away from the management. He sent a letter that he was sick. But at home he was sitting and studying Bhagavatam with the Brahmins. So Maharaj preached, the devotees are always thinking this way, when am I going to be free from these material duties so that I can completely devote my time to hearing and discussing Bhagavatam, the association of devotees. So Parikshit finally, it is really mercy of Sringi that he got cursed and he got the chance to sit in the association of devotees. So Prabhupada talks here in the purport, contrasting modern foolish politicians, Prabhupada says, who hold political administrative posts, think the temporary posts they occupy are the highest material gain of life. Therefore, they stick to those posts even up to the last moment of life without knowing that achievement of liberation as one of the associates of the Lord in his eternal abode is the highest gain of life. Human life is meant for achieving this end. The Lord has assured in Bhagavad Gita many times, going back to Godhead, his eternal abode is the highest achievement. Which verse in Bhagavad Gita says this? Highest achievement. What's that? Paramamama. Say it again. My supreme abode. Paramamama. Yes. 647. Okay. Yeah, the highest yogi, the highest goal. At the end of chapter 8 also. And also in chapter 8, there are many verses. Anyway, like that. So Prahlad Maharaj, now here Prahlad Maharaj is praying to Lord Nrisimhadeva, and he says the same thing. And Prabhupada paraphrases this verse from Bhagavatam in a very beautiful way. Oh my Lord, I'm very much afraid of the materialistic way of life. And I am not the least afraid of your present ghastly, ferocious feature as Nrisimhadeva. This materialistic way of life is something like a grinding stone. How is material life like a grinding stone? Anybody have experience of the grinding stone, Darshan? The three miseries. Okay, so the three miseries are always grinding us down. Adidaivik, Adibhautik, Adiatmik. How else is it like a grinding stone? Yes. Yeah, over and over again we suffer the same thing. Right, no solution. So it's a grinding stone. Two nice analogies in this purport by this is Nrsingadev. We have fallen into this horrible whirlpool of the tossing waves of life. And thus, my Lord, I pray at your lotus feet to call me back to your eternal abode as one of your servitors. This is the summit liberation of this materialistic way of life. I have very bitter experience in materialistic way of life. What are the two painful things that Prahlad has experienced in this life? He says here in this, what is the two, yes? Yes. Yes. Separation from loved ones and then things that come that you don't want. These are the two painful things. Actually, there was a man who was very, very old, over 100 years old. Somebody asked him, let's see, that question. You know that story? Anyway, okay. He asked him a question. The best thing that you experience and what is the worst thing that you experience in life? And he said, I experience now at this age that I am always feeling separation from my loved ones, and I'm also feeling the same thing here, that always people who I don't want to associate, they're coming to associate with me. And so this is the two things, the two problems, the most painful things. Actually, not the best. He was telling the most miserable things. So anyway, Prahlad Maharaj is describing the same thing. Separation from my beloved and meeting with what is not wanted. And to counteract them, the remedies which I undertook were more dangerous than the disease itself. So I drift from one point to another, birth after birth, and I pray to you, therefore, to give me shelter at your lotus feet. Pandava kings, who are more than many saints of the world, knew the bitter results of the materialistic way of life. They were never captivated by the glare of the imperial throne they occupied, and they sought always the opportunity of being called by the Lord to associate with him eternally. So the Pandavas had the same experience. Narada Muni said to them, "You please wait here until Krishna leaves." And so they were just waiting for that opportunity. And then when they found out that Krishna has left the planet, immediately they left. So Maharaj Parikshit also, as soon as he got the opportunity, then he left everything and he came to associate with the sages, Namasharanya. Verse 21. We shall all wait here. Now the sages are speaking about their determination. We shall all wait here until the foremost devotee of the Lord, Maharaj Parikshit, returns to the supreme planet, which is completely free from all mundane contamination and all kinds of lamentation. So Parikshit was happy to get the association of the great sages, and the sages came there just to get his association, as we hear in Bhagavad Gita, Tushyanti Charamanticha. So they are both very happy to get each other's association. At the end of the purport, Srila Prabhupada talks about what happens when a devotee leaves his body. When a great devotee of the Lord passes away, there is nothing to be lamented, because the devotee is destined to enter into the kingdom of God. But the sorry plight is that such great devotees leave our sight. And therefore, there is every reason to be sorry. As the Lord is rarely to be seen by our present eyes, so also all the great devotees. So the sages were determined, Parikshit was determined. They were both determined to get each other's association. And so they met at Naimisharanya. Prabhupada also, he was talking on the disappearance day of his spiritual master, and he said, he was saying, you know, who knew that we would meet? Who knew that I would meet my spiritual master? And who knew that we would all meet together in this association? And so this is happening by the mercy of Krishna, that he got the association of the sages. Verse 22 and 23. All that was spoken by the great sages was very sweet to hear, full of meaning and appropriately presented as perfectly true. So after hearing them, Maharaj Parikshit, desiring to hear of the activities of Lord Shri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, congratulated the great sages. The king said, O great sages, you have all very kindly assembled here, having come from all parts of the universe. You are all as good as supreme knowledge personified, who resides in the planet above the three worlds, Satyaloka. Consequently, you are naturally inclined to do good to others, and but for this, you have no interest, either in this life or in the next. So Prabhupada, at the end of the purport, talks about Satyaloka, how the inhabitants are fully cognizant of Vedic wisdom, and thus the mystic cloud of material energy is clear. So they are known as Vedas personified. They have no interest in this world. They are desireless. So why do they... But sometimes they come here to this earth. So why do they come? Actually, there's a Sanskrit word here that explains why they come here. See if you can find the Sanskrit word that tells why these great sages come down from Satyaloka to this earth. Yes, para anugraha. They are feeling compassion. It is their mercy for others. Para anugraha. Prabhupada says at the end, they have nothing to do in this world save and except reclaim the fallen souls rotting in material existence, deluded by material energy. So we do not know who among us has come to deliver many souls. We should therefore respect all the devotees. So this is this word paranugraha. You can, if you look back in verse 19, the same word is used, almost the same word. Anugraha is there. It says prajanugraha. So these words are describing the sages, how they only want to do good to others. What was their question to Suta Goswami that revealed their mentality of wanting to do good to others? Yes, what is the ultimate benefit for all mankind? So this is how they're thinking. They're thinking about others. This is their mind. So here they're also thinking for the benefit of others. Therefore, they've come here to give their association to Parikshit, to create a very wonderful atmosphere for his departure back to Godhead. So verse 24. O trustworthy brahmanas, I now ask you about my immediate duty. Please, after proper deliberation, tell me of the unalloyed duty of everyone in all circumstances, and specifically of those who are just about to die. In the purport, Prabhupada says, in this verse, the king has placed two questions before the learned sages. The first question is, what is the duty of everyone in all circumstances? And the second question is, what is the specific duty of one who is to die very shortly? Out of the two, the question relating to the dying man is most important because everyone is a dying man, either very shortly or after 100 years. The duration of life is immaterial, but the duty of a dying man is very important. So that's, we're all dying men here. We're all dying. So therefore, this question is important for us. We should be interested in this question. We are all dying here. We do not know when our death will come. Maharaj Parikshit placed these two questions before Shivadeva Goswami also on his arrival. And practically, the whole of Srimad Bhagavatam, beginning from the second canto up to the last 12th canto, deals with these two questions. So therefore, you should know what these two questions are. Very important questions. And he'll say this, we'll see how he asks the same questions with some variation to Shukadeva Goswami. Now Prabhupada's going to tell us the answer in case we don't make it to the rest of the cantos. Conclusion arrived at thereof is that devotional service of Lord Shri Krishna, as it is confirmed by the Lord himself in the last phases of Bhagavad Gita, is the last word in relation to everyone's permanent duty in life. Maharaj Parikshit was already aware of this fact. But he wanted the great sages assembled there to unanimously give their verdict on his conviction, so he might be able to go on with his confirmed duty without controversy. So he has specifically mentioned the word shuddha, or perfectly correct. For transcendental realization or self-realization, many processes are recommended by various classes of philosophers. So why is he saying here, without controversy? Is there some controversy going on here? Okay. What do you say, Madhavendra Puri?
Obviously, there are different types of transcendentalists.
Yes.
The master sages.
Yes.
And that's how they were not really a certain to which class they might have been.
Mm-hmm. So, I guess, there was some controversy there.
Yeah.
There was, yes. Yes. Everybody in the future wants to. Everybody wants to follow his own path, different paths. So he wants to clear the path. Yes, Mohan Gopal. Yeah, it's coming up. I will read it. Yeah, I think it's the next purport actually. Actually, in a lecture though in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada said that he was talking about the sages. And he said some were in favor of fruitive activities, karmakanda, pious activities, some were in favor of yoga principles, some were in favor of philosophical speculation, and some were in favor of devotional service or bhakti. Prabhupada said that there were different people and they had different advice to give. So there was a little controversy there amongst the sages. And Prabhupada will mention this in the next purport. But one point that Prabhupada made in his lecture on this verse is that we don't know how much time we have left before our death. So we should be so serious. Chanaka Pandit says, if you want to make spiritual advancement, you should also think that death may come at any moment. Death may come. This is the instruction. Danger is coming, death is coming. And Prabhupada, in a Bhagavad Gita lecture, also said the same thing, that there is one verse in Bhagavad Gita which Prabhupada quoted in the 13th chapter. He says that those who are intelligent persons who are making progress to become wiser, for them four things should always be kept in view. In the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there's four things that a jnani... Yes. Yes. Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, dukkha, dosha, anudarshanam. You should always remember these four things and then you'll make spiritual progress. Prabhupada said. And this is what Chanaka Pandit also says. So we'll go to verse 25. At that moment, there appeared the powerful son of Vyasadeva, who traveled over the earth, disinterested and satisfied with himself. He did not manifest any symptoms of belonging to any social order or status of life. He was surrounded with women and children, and he dressed as if others had neglected him. So we find a lot of people like that here in India that fit this description. So therefore, they didn't take him very seriously, because a lot of people are like that, that they dress like beggars, they dress like nobody's taking care of them. And so obviously, how would they know that this is a great liberated soul? No clothes. He must be crazy. So... But Shukadeva was so disinterested in social customs that he didn't even bother to wear clothes. Generally, you can tell somebody which social level he is by how he dresses. So nobody could figure out what level Shukadeva was at. Because he wasn't in the Varnashram. He was beyond. You could not put him into any category. At the end of the purport, Prabhupada says, just what I think Madan Gopal was just saying, it appears that upon the inquiry of Maharaj Pariksit, the great sages were not unanimous in their decision as to what was to be done. For spiritual salvation, there were many prescriptions according to the different modes of different persons, but the ultimate aim of life is to attain the highest perfectional stage of devotional service to the Lord. So Prabhupada doesn't let us have any doubt. He tells us always, again and again, this is the answer, this is the answer, this is the answer. So we don't have to worry. that we get confused. And now Shukadev will also give the answer. Actually, we won't hear it till Monday, but we'll hear about the auspicious appearance of Shukadev Goswami. The son of Vyasadev was only 16 years old. His legs, hands, thighs, arms, shoulders, forehead, and the other parts of his body were all delicately formed. His eyes were beautifully wide, and his nose and ears were highly raised. He had a very attractive face, and his neck was well-formed and beautiful, like a conch shell. His collarbone was fleshy, his chest broad and thick, his navel deep, and his abdomen beautifully striped. His arms were long, and curly hair was strewn over his beautiful face. He was naked, and the hue of his body reflected that of Lord Krishna. He was blackish and very beautiful due to his youth. Because of the glamour of his body and his attractive smiles, he was pleasing to women. Though he tried to cover his natural glories, the great sages present there were all expert in the art of physiognomy, and so they honored him by rising from their seats. Maharaj Parikshit, who is also known as Vishnu Ratha, one who is always protected by Vishnu, bowed his head to receive the chief guest, Shukadev Goswami. At that time, all the ignorant women and boys ceased following Srila Shukadev. Receiving respect from all, Shukadev Goswami took his exalted seat. Prabhupada comments in a lecture that even Shukadev's father, Vyasadev, came there to hear his 16-year-old son speak Srimad Bhagavatam. He wanted to hear. Narada Muni came. They were all very eager to hear this young boy, about the same age as my son, to speak Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is quite amazing. So Prabhupada makes the point that it doesn't matter if you're young or you're old. It's a question of knowledge. So Shukadev Goswami, he had the knowledge. So therefore, they all accepted him as the chief speaker, Srimad Bhagavatam. What did we hear in the first three verses? In the third verse of Srimad Bhagavatam about Shukadev Goswami and his speaking. Shukamukad Amita Javasam Yutam. Very nectarian how he will speak Srimad Bhagavatam. So they wanted to hear. Now, in the next verse, Srila Prabhupada will explain why they honored Shukadev Goswami so especially. Shukadev Goswami, I'll read the Sanskrit. Susamvitastatta mahanmahiyasam brahmarshi rajashi devashi sanghai yarochatalam bhagavan yatendur kahakshitara nikarai parita. Shukadev Goswami was then surrounded by saintly sages and demigods, just as the moon is surrounded by stars, planets, and other heavenly bodies. His presence was gorgeous, and he was respected by all. So in the purport, Prabhupada explains, in the great assembly of saintly personalities, there was Vyasadeva the Brahmarshi, Narada Devarshi, Parashuram the great ruler of the Kshatriya kings, or Rajarshi. Some of them were powerful incarnations of the Lord. Shukadev Goswami was not known as Brahmarshi, Rajarshi, or Devarshi, nor was he an incarnation like Narada, Vyasa, or Parashuram. So why were they all honoring him? He was not one of those great rishis. Why did he get all the honor? What did Prabhupada say in the purport? He's a devotee, pure devotee. Prabhupada says in the purport, yet he excelled them in respects paid. Because this means the devotee of the Lord is more honored in the world than the Lord himself. One should therefore never minimize the importance of a devotee like Shukadev Goswami. Just imagine, here all these incarnations are sitting there waiting to listen to this 16-year-old Shukadev Goswami. We got big, big incarnations of the Lord that we hear about all the time. They're all coming here to hear this young boy speak Bhagavatam. So this is the scene. He comes in, you know, completely unrecognized, undressed, and all these people are following him. And then all of a sudden, all the great sages stand up out of respect. So this is quite amazing. So what are some other examples how the devotee of the Lord is honored more than the Lord himself? Examples from anywhere. Yeah. Yes.
I think you
Yes.
Sunday
feast lecture.
The most famous conversation of all times. And yet the Lord is allowing
yes.
us to speak on this conversation.
Yes. That's very wonderful. Yes. He's glorifying. The devotees are being glorified, speaking Bhagavad Gita. The same message that Lord Krishna spoke on the battlefield to Arjuna. What's another example of how the Lord glorifies his devotees? Yes. Bhishma Dev, yes. Yes, how nobody, Krishna could not console Yudhisthira, but Bhishma could. Nishinana. Sudama, yes. Yes. Sudama, he was washing Sudama's feet, taking the water on his head. Shivandavan. Yashodanandara. He's always connected with his devotees. That's how his devotees are glorified. Yes, Maji? Yeah. Right. Yes, Lord Chaitanya spread Krishna consciousness all over India, and he gave the glory to Srila Prabhupada to spread it all over the world. Yes, Nishimnanda. Yes. Yes, he empowered Haridas Thakur, he empowered Rupa Goswami and Ramananda Roy, Leela Madhuri. Yes. You must glorify Krishna through the Guru Parampara. Vanamali? Okay. Yeah, so one of the 12 saints, 12 or I don't know how many, 12 saints of South India, he said, he never glorified Krishna. He says, I don't know the Lord. Yeah, so I only know my Guru. Nishinanda? And then. Acha. Higher than Lord Chaitanya is Nityananda. Although it is the mission of Lord Chaitanya, Nityananda's desire is more. Nishingadev? Okay, Arjuna is an example. Maji? Right, right. Bhishmadev. Shivandavan. Gopis of Vrindavan? Right. Yeah, so Krishna said to the gopis, Na parayeham, I cannot repay your service. Why not? Why couldn't he repay? That's a hard question. That's right. They were willing to sacrifice everything, but what did Krishna sacrifice for them? They gave up everything for Krishna. But Krishna, he was just having fun. He just went out and anyway, yes. Yes, yes. Yes. Yes, when they went to see Bhishma, Yudhisthira was on a more beautiful chariot than Lord Krishna because he was emperor. Okay, Yudhisthira did only 3 Ashwamedha sacrifices. He's glorified more than Indra. Okay, last one, Madhavendra Puri. Yes. Yes. The biggest event in Vrindavan is Kartik Prabhupada's disappearance. So, yes, devotees come here all over the world. Even it's become bigger than Mayapur. It has become. And they come here for Kartik. So this is. So then they're going to, in Mayapur, they're going to have the festival dedicated for Tamal Krishna Maharaj. So devotees will come for glorifying the devotee. Yes. So this is the happiness of Krishna when his devotee is glorified more than himself. So therefore, now Parikshit is going to show us how to approach the spiritual master, Shukadeva Goswami. He says Shukadeva Goswami sat perfectly pacified, intelligent, and ready to answer any question without hesitation. The great devotee, Maharaj Parikshit, approached him, offered his respects by bowing before him, and politely inquired with sweet words and folded hands. So he's showing how to approach the guru. At the end of the purport, Prabhupada gives a heavy statement for any of you who go to ask your guru silly questions. There is no necessity of approaching a spiritual master unless one is in need of solving the problems of life. One who does not know how to put questions before the spiritual master has no business seeing him. In Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada also says in the purport, Tadviti Pranipatena, that absurd inquiries are condemned. So, therefore, this is also being shown. He's going to ask him very essential questions, the essential questions of life. Qualification of the spiritual master is perfectly manifested in the person of Shukadeva Goswami. So both of them attain perfection by hearing and by chanting. Verse 32. The fortunate King Parikshit said, O Brahmana, by your mercy only, you have sanctified us, making us like unto places of pilgrimage. All by your presence here is my guest. By your mercy, we, who are but unworthy royalty, become eligible to serve the devotee. So remember that word atiti that we talked about here in the Sanskrit. We find it again. Atiti, kripa, atiti, rupena. Atiti. So you have come in the form of an uninvited guest. So Parikshit is playing the host there on the bank of the Jamuna for all the sages. He welcomed them and he spoke very sweet words. So now he's welcoming Shukadeva Goswami also, that you have come just like an atiti. This is uninvited guest. It's just like God, actually, in Hindu culture. So he is very happy to see Shukadeva Goswami, just like Bhishma Dev. When he was lying on the bed of arrows, he also welcomed all the sages with sweet words. In the same way, it was his house. His home was the battlefield, and he was right at home lying on the bed of arrows. So he was also in the same way welcoming everyone. Now Shukadeva is also welcoming the sages. Parikshit is welcoming Shukadeva and the sages. Again, we can see his attitude here of great humility, that I am simply unworthy. What does he say here? No, he doesn't say. He'll say it in the next verse. Here he's being very polite. And, what's that? Oh, yes, he does say that in the verse. Unworthy royalty. Thank you. He says it, by your mercy, we who are but unworthy royalty become eligible to serve the devotee. So this aspiration, what is his aspiration here? By your mercy, I can fulfill my desire to serve the devotees. That's his desire. He's not saying, oh, by your mercy, now I'm going to go straight back to Krishna and I'm going to be one of the gopis or cowherd boys. He says, no, now by your mercy, I get the chance to serve the devotees. That's his desire. That's the desire of Lord Chaitanya, gopi bhartu padakamalayar, dasa dasa anudasa. That was the desire of Mahaj Prataparuja. Lord Chaitanya would not see him. But when the devotees, they were begging Lord Chaitanya wouldn't hear it. But finally, when Mahaj Prataparuja showed favor to Ramananda Roy, who was very dear to Lord Chaitanya, then Lord Chaitanya became merciful. The devotees made an arrangement. Mahaj Prataparuja got there to massage Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feet. And I said this before, that when he was asked by Lord Chaitanya, who are you? He said, I am the servant of your servant. His real identity. So therefore, it's a very wonderful service. And this is aspired to by the emperor of the world, Mahaj Parikshit. And how he got qualified to do this service? By the association of Shukadeva Goswami. By the association of the devotees, we get the wonderful opportunity to serve the devotees. So here, again, Parikshit is showing us that this is actually the desired goal of life, to serve the devotees. Verse 33. Simply by our remembering you, our houses become instantly sanctified. And what to speak of seeing you, touching you, washing your holy feet, and offering you a seat in our home. This verse is quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita when, Ballabha Bhattacharya met Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also. So we've heard before how the saints, they purify the holy places. So just imagine if one of these saints comes to your house. This is the perfection of grihastha life, to have the sadhus come and you're able to serve them. So this Prabhupada explains in the purport, by the grace of the devotees and saints, if they appear in the homes of worldly people, certainly the accumulated sins of such... Oh, that's the next verse, next purport. I'm going ahead of myself. Okay, so let's go to verse 34. Just as the atheist cannot remain in the presence of the personality of Godhead, so also the invulnerable sins of a man are immediately vanquished in your presence, O saint, O great mystic. So this is here in the purport also about the how they sanctify, how they get rid of all the sins of the householders. And actually verse 33, there's another thing I want to say about that. This verse is quoted in Nectar of Devotion. This verse that just simply by remembering you, touching you, seeing you, and then offering a seat in our home. This verse is in Nectar of Devotion. Does anybody know what this verse illustrates in Nectar of Devotion? A certain topic. Actually, it's one of the five most potent. Yes. 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 Association of devotees, sadhu sangha. This verse 33 is quoted in Nectar of Devotion to illustrate sadhu sangha. So this is very important instruction here. In that section from Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada explains a few more things about what happens when you serve the devotees. Srila Prabhupada says, service of devotees diminishes all miserable material conditions and develops within one a deep devotional love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And another verse, this is in Nectar of Devotion, chapter 12. My dear Partha, one who claims to be my devotee is not so. Only a person who claims to be the devotee of my devotee is actually my devotee. So no one can approach the Supreme Lord directly. We have to go through his devotee. And we can see that those of us who knew nothing about Krishna, who were in the West, we got attached to Srila Prabhupada. We served him, and by serving him, we got attachment for Krishna. Because we didn't know who is Krishna. To us, we didn't know anything about Krishna. But we knew Srila Prabhupada. So by having Guru Nishtha, then we got Nishtha, we got faith in Krishna, Shraddha. So Prabhupada, he was such a devotee who could purify all the holy places, who could get rid of the sins of everyone in his presence. Now at the end of this purport of 34, not the end, about five lines down, Prabhupada says, the demons are always busy trying to vanquish the personality of Godhead, but factually, as soon as the personality of Godhead appears, by either his transcendental name, form, attributes, pastimes, paraphernalia, or variegatedness, the demon is at once vanquished. It is said that a ghost cannot remain as soon as the holy name of the Lord is chanted. The great saints and devotees of the Lord are in the list of his paraphernalia, just like name, form, pastimes, devotees. It's in that same list that we always talk about. The name, the qualities, and the devotees. All of these can get rid of the sins. So Prabhupada said, as soon as a saintly devotee is present, the ghostly sins are at once vanquished. That is the verdict of all Vedic literatures. One is recommended, therefore, to associate only with saintly devotees so that worldly demons and ghosts cannot exert their sinister influence. In Nectar of Devotion, it is described, is it two witches that haunt? Bhukti and Mukti. So by the association of devotees, these two are finished. Actually, I can give an example according to my experience that For a long time in my devotional life, I was having that desire for liberation. This place is so miserable. I just can't wait to get out. But then I came in contact. I had the darshan of Pankajangri and Jnanivas, and they really smashed my whole idea. They said, no, actually what you should want is to please Krishna. And so therefore, since that day, I changed my mind. This is what I should do. Please Krishna and Srila Prabhupada, instead of desiring liberation. Verse 35. So by their association, these ghosts are vanquished. Some witches. Verse 35. Lord Krishna, personality of Godhead, who is very dear to the sons of King Pandu, has accepted me as one of those relatives just to please his great cousins and brothers. So he calls himself Gotra Bandava, just like we have Brahma Bandhu, Kshatra Bandhu. I am Gotra Bandhu. I'm not really a proper inheritor or a proper descendant in this line, but I'm just a friend. Means that he's putting himself as someone who is not qualified to be a descendant. Of course, he's more than qualified, but that's his humility. So he's saying, actually, the reason why all of you have come here is just to please Krishna, who is very dear to my relatives, the Pandavas. So Prabhupada, in the purport, he says the same thing. He talks about, this is near the end, the Lord is so kind, he gives all protection to the family members of his devotees. Thus a devotee has no need to bother about his family members, even if one leaves such family members aside to discharge devotional service. Maharaj Yudhisthira and his brothers were the sons of Kunti, the paternal aunt of Lord Krishna. Maharaj Pariksit admits the patronage of Lord Krishna because of his being the only grandson of the great Pandavas. So here's an instruction, but we have to sometimes take these instructions according to time, place, and circumstance. It's not that you have small children and you just leave them and go to serve Krishna. You have to also follow the Vaishnava etiquette and the Vaishnava association. Who now, of course, there's a new rule about sannyas. Your youngest son, or I think the youngest son, has to be 16 years old before anybody can take sannyas in ISKCON. So this is, as far as I know, I've heard this from the Grihasthas. So, but Pariksit, he's giving up everything, and we will see the result. Now, he's saying, verse 36, otherwise, without being inspired by Lord Krishna, how is it that you have voluntarily appeared here, though you are moving incognito to the common man and are not visible to us who are on the verge of death? I'm missing some pages here. Verse 36. Okay. So he's talking, Pariksit is talking to Shukadev, and he's praising his own good fortune that how you have appeared here. How is it so wonderful that you just go wherever you like of your own free will and suddenly you've come here to be with me? So he said, must be because of Krishna's relationship with the Pandavas. And Krishna is feeling that because I'm a descendant of the Pandavas, therefore he's sending you to help me. So this is his reasoning. And Prabhupada says this also at the end of the purport. One can achieve the ultimate success of going back to Godhead if he is favored by the Lord sending his true representative. As soon as a true representative of the Lord is met by a devotee of the Lord, devotee is assured a guarantee for going back to Godhead just after leaving the present body. I got one of those guarantees in my initiation letter. Prabhupada told me, he said, first birth is from your parents, but real birth, real life begins when one accepts a bona fide spiritual master and renders service to him. Then the path is open for going back home, back to Godhead, to live eternally in full knowledge and full bliss in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, Lord Krishna. So he gave me that guarantee, as long as I follow his instructions. So then in the purport, there is a clause here, that is given by Srila Prabhupada, that yes, you have a guarantee, but there is something that depends upon us, Prabhupada says. This, however, depends on the sincerity of the devotee himself. So my second letter, Prabhupada said to me, work sincerely and enthusiastically and cooperate with the devotees. So he gave me that this is how you should do it. This is, you do, you chant your rounds, you do these things, but this is the quality that's necessary to do these things. So sincerity is required. Prabhupada continues, the Lord is seated in the heart of all living beings, and thus he knows very well the movements of all individual persons. What does this mean, the movements? He knows the movements, yeah. Wanderings? Paramatma is in the heart. Where we wander, okay. What does this mean, the movements, yeah. Desires. He knows our desires. Avinanda? What's that? Ah, yes, motivation. He knows our motivation. Shingadevi. He knows all our feelings, yes. So these are our movements. We're moved by our desires, and therefore we wander. Our motivation. As soon as the Lord finds a particular soul is very eager to go back to Godhead, the Lord at once sends his bona fide representative. The sincere devotee is thus assured by the Lord of going back to Godhead. Conclusion is that to get the assistance and help of a bona fide spiritual master means to receive the direct help of the Lord himself. So this is what is happening now with Parikshit and Shukadeva Goswami. Verse 37. You are the spiritual master of great saints and devotees. I am therefore begging you to show the way of perfection for all persons, and especially for one who is about to die. So again he asks the question. Prabhupada explains, unless one is perfectly anxious to inquire about the way of perfection, there is no necessity of approaching a spiritual master. So again and again, Prabhupada says the same thing. This should be our question, how to attain perfection. Spiritual master is not a kind of decoration for a householder. In India, we find many gurus are decorations for the householders. Generally, a fashionable materialist engages a so-called spiritual master without any profit. The pseudo-spiritual master flatters the so-called disciple, and thereby both the master and his ward go to hell without a doubt. Prabhupada says, Maharaj Parikshit, Prabhupada was not flattering. Prabhupada spoke the truth. Maharaj Parikshit is the right type of disciple because he puts forward questions vital to the interest of all men, particularly for the dying men. So here Prabhupada is saying, what is the right type of disciple? The question put forward by Maharaj Parikshit is the basic principle of the complete thesis of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now let us see how intelligently the great master replies. Verse 38. Please let me know what a man should hear, chant, remember, and worship, and also what he should not do. Please explain all this to me. So these two questions, whole Bhagavatam. He will see in the second canto, in the first and second and third chapters, how he is going to explain what to do and what not to do. Both things are going to be there. Answering, and also he'll explain what you should hear, chant, remember, and worship. Of course, we've already heard Sutta Goswami explain this right from the beginning, but we will hear the same, practically the same exact verse in the beginning of second canto as we heard in the beginning of the first canto. O powerful Brahmana, it is said that you hardly stay in the houses of men long enough to milk a cow. Prabhupada in a tape, he was explaining, Shukadeva used to go in the morning time for half an hour, beg for a little milk, and then his whole day's begging business was finished. He said that was his only begging, just a little milk. And that's all he had the whole day. And that's how long he used to stay. Sri Sutta Goswami said, the king thus spoke and questioned the sage using sweet language. Then the great and powerful personality, the son of Vyasadeva, who knew the principles of religion, began his reply. So this is the ultimate question. We're all faced with death. What is our duty? So now we have the great fortune to hear the answer of this question very sweetly given to us by Shukadev, the greatly renowned son of Vyasadeva, and digested for us by Srila Prabhupada. We will hear all of the answers to these questions. Prabhupada will give it to us in such a way that we who have no qualification, who are we compared to Maharaj Parikshit sitting with all the sages? But because Prabhupada is giving his purports, we can also understand what is going on between these two great souls. We've heard how the Pandavas, how they left their home, Kunti, Draupadi, the Pandavas, and they attained perfection by leaving everything and going off to the Himalayas alone. But Parikshit's method is different. He's renouncing the kingdom and he's going to the association of devotees. His perfection will be in kirtan, hearing and chanting Srimad Bhagavatam, surrounded by supportive devotees. Quite different. You compare how Yudhisthira left and how Parikshit is going to leave. So we cannot follow Yudhisthira and the Pandavas, the process that they did. There is a verse in the 15th chapter. It says, Yudhisthira amalgamated all the sense organs into the mind into life, life into breathing, his total existence into embodiment of the five elements, his body into death. Then as pure self, he became free from the material conception of life. So very difficult to follow that path. But we can follow Parikshit's path, simply chanting and hearing Bhagavatam in association of devotees. So Parikshit is giving us a very nice path to follow for perfection of life. So we should be very eager to follow this path. So let's stop here. Any questions or comments on these verses? Mm-hmm. Mexico. Yes. Same result. Yes, so lady asked, what's the result of thinking of Prabhupada at the time of death? And he said, same result. Yes, you know, Darshan? Okay. What, Shutakirti Prabhu? Okay, Shutakirti Prabhu says, even if he's not Krishna conscious, at the point of death, he wants to be Prabhupada conscious. Yes. Leo Majori. Bhakti Chara Maharaj. Okay. Bhakti Chara Maharaj says, I don't think I can bring you back to Krishna, but I can bring you back to Srila Prabhupada. Best place. Wherever, of course, wherever Prabhupada is, Krishna is. That's why you'll be sure. You'll be sure if you're with Prabhupada. Any other questions or comments? Yes. Right. Yes. Right. Go to the next house. Yes. Yes. This is Hindu Vedic culture. Vedic culture. Just by remembering Prabhupada without even having his physical association. Of course, you're getting his association anyway. But simply by remembering him, that's a fact, that people can become devotees and do and perform wonderful activities. So he, actually, that proves that Prabhupada lives. Prabhupada lives in his words. Any other comments of Anamali?
Text 38.
Text 38.
Hmm. Biased idea. I know who is the worst. I know what to learn. Mm-hmm.
Okay, sometimes Vanamali says sometimes he approaches, he goes to his guru, but he doesn't know what question to ask, so now he knows. Verse 38. Very good question to ask the guru. Yes, we can follow in the footsteps of the great devotees, and we can ask the questions they ask. This is very nice. Parvati. Yes. Yes. Even when he was here, it was not his physical association. Because we didn't see him that much, actually. most of us. Right, even if we were seeing. Yeah. Right. Was not a material, physical, like, material thing, right. Okay, any other questions? Yes. Yeah. Oh, in New Vrindavan. Oh, recent story.
Old story. I read it and it says that
yes.
In New Vrindavan community started their own direction.
Yes.
And
they started to deviate.
Some visitor who came to the palace in the museum took the shoes, and after 15 years, the shoes
appeared.
Yeah. The letter explained that. The letter says, I have taken the shoes. I never have done anything like that, but there was a voice telling him, take the shoes and put it in the bag. Take the shoes and put it in the bag.
Yeah.
Reluctantly, the first minute, and after 15 years, in a dream,
Prabhupada came.
Prabhupada came. And now it's time to return the shoes.
Yeah.
And that was the time when you and I again
joined to ISKCON. Yeah. Yes. She was just a middle-aged, you know, regular housewife on a tour to New Vrindavan. And everybody went out of the room and she heard the voice, take the shoes. And she was like really, really worried. I heard the story. And then she heard it again, take the shoes. And then she said, but I'm a Christian. I'm a good Christian. I never stole anything in my life. They said, take the shoes. She put it in her shopping bag. And so it's quite amazing. Yeah. And then after he came back and said, you can give them back now. And she was afraid to go there herself, so she sent them in a package with a message. He thought they might do something. Yeah, I'm an agora. Yeah, question? Verse 23. Satyaloka. Yes, one time I remember somebody asked Srila Prabhupada that what is the destination of those who worship Christ? And he said, Brahmaloka. And Christ, that's where Christ lives. Yeah. Asha, Paramatma. Interesting. Vishnu Purana. Which one? Pavishya Purana. Pavishya Purana. Okay. Darshan. Lord Brahma. Interesting. Of course, we don't take it that way, though. Yeah. Well, he does talk a lot about creation in the beginning. So, but yeah, of course, Prabhupada always interpreted that it was Krishna, and he took the word Christ. As if you trace it back to the Greek, it says Christos, and if you trace that to the Sanskrit, it's Krista, and Krista is a form of Krishna. Attraction. Generally, he didn't. If that may be a fact, but he never preached like that. Yes. What was that you said? Oh, he's Brahma and not Krishna. Well, actually, if you analyze the name Jesus Christ, Jesus is the first name. Christ is the surname. So it's Jesus. I mean, the way they say it, Jesus of the Christ. So Jesus of Krishna. Like he's his family name is Krishna. So anyway, that's the way Prabhupada would interpret it, that he is of the Christ or of Krishna. It's his surname. Yeah, one last. Aquarian Gospel. Yeah, Christ came. Yes. He came to India. Yeah, he came. There is a part in the Bible where the parts, years are missing there. Kashmir, yeah. So yes, all the great preachers are connected. They're all connected with Krishna. They come down. Even Prabhupada, one time, he was saying some of his disciples came from Bhumaloka to help him. He said that also. Which one? Bhumaloka. To help him. He said that. I don't remember the exact names. Would be interesting. Yeah. Yeah, maybe. That name kind of, I think, might be. Might be there. Any other questions or comments? She said Brahmananda. I said maybe. Yes, we have to ask him. I don't know if he would tell us or not. Okay, any other questions or comments? Yes. Shukadev didn't belong to any order of Varnashram. Because at the time of his birth, as soon as he came out, he left home without doing any samskars. See, if you're a part of Varnashram, then you have all these samskars. At birth you have one, name giving ceremony, you have the initiation where you get diksha. He didn't get initiation, and he should have. Well, it makes you a follower of Varnashram. So most of the devotees, when they come, they follow, just like the Pandavas. They all took initiation, all these things. So most of them followed. But Shukadev, he did. He was not a part of the Varnashram. He was beyond. He was liberated from birth. Yeah. Brahminical. So the question is, wasn't he at least a Brahmin?
Well, you know, wasn't anything indicated there?
Well, his bodily features. They read his body. The sages, it says here in the text that they were conversant in the science of physiognomy. So there is a science where somebody can look at your face or look at your body and they can tell you. They can tell what kind of person you are. I can tell you, there is a science, yeah. Yes. Yes, so here we go. Here's the answer. He knows, because he's in South India. So according to the Varnashram system, if you die before you get initiation, then there is no ritual for you, because you're not part of the Varnashram. You didn't get initiation. And so these things were very, very strict at the time of Shukadev Goswami. Everybody went through all these Varnashram rituals, and his father wanted him to, but Shukadev wouldn't have it. He wasn't part of it. But he was above. He was actually above. Paramahansa, Avaduta, whatever you want to say. He was Mukta Purush, liberated soul. He didn't need Varnashram, yeah. Another related to Shukadev. Yeah. Must have just come out. I heard 16. Yeah. Yeah, he grew up immediately. Yeah, it's counted. Yeah. When he was... Well, he didn't come directly. He was wandering around first. Because it says that his father was following him, and then there were the women bathing, and he was 16. You know, he left immediately after birth. Vyasadeva was running after him. And the both of them were going on the path. There were some women who were bathing naked, and they didn't cover themselves when Shukadev passed. He was 16 at that time. And his father passed. It seems it happened at the same time. The Vyasadeva, they were both going. And he was 16 years old. That's not mentioned here, but after, yes. Yes, he could be eternally 16, that's another point. He could be that's the age of the spiritual world. Madhavendra Puri. Quotes. Later on in Bhagavatam, it will come. It will be mentioned, I think in the ninth canto, yeah, where it's giving the whole dynasty, and there is a Shuka mentioned, and that's the Prabhupada explains in the purport, that's the duplicate Shuka. Yeah, ninth canto, you look it up in the, and there's a whole list, and his daughter marries one of the kings, Shukadev's daughter, I think. And so you can look it up there. Duplicate Shuka. He made a duplicate so his father wouldn't be too upset. Yes? Well, Prabhupada says they were equal. Because Maharaj Parikshit, he was also Siddha because he had the impression of Krishna from his, actually from the womb. And when Shukadev was in the womb, Krishna also came and preached to him to come out. So they were equal. They were not, Prabhupada always says they were equal. We'll read in the second canto many purports, not many, but a few where Prabhupada compares Maharaj Parikshit and Shukadev. I think right in the beginning, how Maharaj Parikshit, in his childhood, he was playing with Krishna dolls. So he says they were both equal. Just like he says Parikshit and Shamik Rishi were equal, and Parikshit and Shukadev were equal. But one is the speaker, one is the hearer, Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes. I know. It's amazing. It's very unusual. But they recognized him as unusual. He was extraordinary and he was unusual, and therefore they wanted to hear from him. They were very eager to hear Shukadev, Divyambar. Okay, not the age, but how much time do you spend remembering Krishna? The experience, right. The time that you spend remembering Krishna is what she's saying is the criteria.